hey guys, welcome to Get Live Podcast Kunai. And you're like, oh, Bish, what anime are you going to talk about today? No, we're not going to do that. We're actually going to have a little bit of an interview segment with one of my favorite people. I'm joking. It's just Tyson. Tyson is here with us today. Say hello, Tyson.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Bish.
I'm sorry, Tyson. You left the podcast. So this is your problem, man.
I am a co-founder of this. You don't get to treat me that way, Bish.
No,
you don't get to treat me that way.
Tyson, you know I love you, man. You know I love you.
I have serious reasons to doubt your love, Bish.
Tyson, like, we met in real life. We watched Oremo together.
And before this gets any more weirder, I would like to introduce our guest for today's episodes, the social marketing manager for Copic and overall big bro and shonen hero, Nate Ming.
Hello. You guys watched Oremo together? That was a point of bonding for you guys?
I'll tell you something. Tyson came to UK. I was there in his hotel. I was like his, his lackey for the day. I was like his butler. Oh, Bish, go get me some water from Tesco. So I went, get me some Skittles and make sure that they're only green Skittles, okay? None of this red Skittles bullshit.
You're going to pick out all the red Skittles.
I ironed his trousers for him, you know? I went
I'm learning so much about this.
I was simping for Tyson.
Dude, you didn't even take my money. You actually wanted to use your own money to pay for the water.
I did. And you know why? Because I'm a good friend, Tyson. You better
that is real that. Friendship right there.
Exactly.
That is, okay. You know, part of the Holy Trinity. Friendship, effort, victory.
Exactly.
And no red Skittles.
No, and the podcast is over. The podcast is over. No, get out of here.
Don't do this, Tyson. Look. Nate, I'll tell you the story about the Oremo, actually. So there was a Chromecast in the room, and I was like, you know what? Me and Kevin, another co-host, we're going to watch Oremo for the podcast, and we were going to do that recording. And, I don't even know. I was just like, Tyson, we need to watch Oremo. So I was trying to cast, and we couldn't get it working because Crunchyroll doesn't have the first season of Oremo in the UK, which was kind of...
Oh my God. I'm getting flashbacks to working at CR. Well, that's the thing, though. Regional licensing is difficult, and a lot of people, some companies have things in some regions and others don't. And, like, I get it, but it's still frustrating, you know?
I know. But season two is, like, the worst season of Oremo. And I was like, you know what, Tyson? We're going to watch this. And I think we watched, like, one or two episodes. And then it all started to fall apart.
I should add, I introduced Bish to Burr because one of the things I made sure to do before I traveled to the UK was pay for a VPN. I'm sorry. I'm not gonna be using UK stuff.
Whoa.
Living my enjoyment. No, I want the Amazon Prime of the US. I want the Crunchyroll of the US. I want the Funimation of the US.
Sorry, Tyson. We've got the best quality stuff here. All right, we've got better. We got Mars bars. We got I don't even remember. We got Guinness. We got all this great stuff. And you're saying, oh, I'm going to use a VPN because I don't want to watch British anime. Tyson, how dare you?
I will concede this. Your Coca-Cola is the best I have ever tasted.
Because it's made with real sugar, not that bullshit fructose syrup shit.
if you're going to diss Coke, at least use the right name of the ingredient. High fructose corn syrup.
I'm sorry. Even saying that gives me diabetes. I don't want to say that. Okay? It's not the best. Look, Tyson, I'm not here to dispute about, you know, what is better. And I will just say this, and I'll have you concede here, that stuff from the UK is better, even our anime. Even though that might not be true. Okay.
Oh my God. See, this is what you guys listen to Kunai. We're a comedy show disguised as a review podcast. It's an anime review podcast.
That's it.
This is what you're here for.
We're not even focusing on Nate. It's just me and Tyson getting back together, good old friends.
I'm just here as an observer. It's two friends bickering, which is always hilarious. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
I was saying, is there anything in the U.S. that you don't like food-wise?
Let's see. Things I don't like in the U.S. food-wise. So I am a tremendous, I don't want to even say foodie. Foodie implies like some level of like culture. I think badass is a more appropriate term because I just love food. Like the only reason I work out is not to like, I don't work out for my own like physical perfection. My body is a temple. No. My body is a garbage disposal. And if I exercise, I can eat more. That's the trade-off. And I love food. So I think It's just, you know what I miss? I miss restaurants. I have been good. I have stayed indoors. I have stayed quarantined, you know, only order takeout. I miss the experience of a restaurant. That is what I miss.
Are restaurants not open in the US?
Some restaurants are limited open. So like some places you can go in, you wear your mask. They only have a few tables open. There's more back in, there's more that are open back in Monterey where my mom lives, but in San Francisco, most of the places here, or Daly City, which is near San Francisco, most of the places are takeout only. Like my favorite places are takeout only. And so I will happily support them. I am fine with doing takeout to make sure that like they still get business. I just miss that experience. You know, like I can wait. It's just a little disappointment.
No, I know how you feel. Like it's the same here, but a lot of our restaurants are opening again, which is all right. Okay. Don't get me wrong, but it's kind of a bit of a mess because people don't like wearing masks here. And if you're listening, guys, wear a fucking mask, okay? Don't be a hero. Wear a mask. That's all I'm going to say about that. I know we're going to get a lot of people like, no, fuck you and this and that. But no, you got to wear a mask because people die if you don't. That's just
it's a group project. It's a group project. Everybody's got to do their part, and if we all do our part, it will be done faster.
All of that depressing shit aside, it's interesting that you mentioned that you work out, because you know what, Nate, I'm also a fat ass, but I don't work out, so then I end up looking like a fat bastard. You know those fat bastard tags, or was it ugly bastard tags, and like the hentai and shit? That's me at the moment. Because I'm not working.
Well, you're stuck in quarantine. You've got all the time in the world. We can find something good for you.
I mean, what do you mean by that, Nate? Are we talking hentai? Are we talking about working out here? Because I don't know what you mean by something good here.
Yeah, I'm sure jerking off is cardiovascular exercise. So, you know, we'll find something for you.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you. I really do appreciate that. So this is what I love. I love having
there's your pull quote right there. There's your pull quote for this episode. Quote,
it's
cardiovascular exercise, end quote.
That's the episode title.
That is the episode title, and it's a good thing that you mentioned that, because I just want to mention our sponsors, J-List sponsored this podcast, so that's very appropriate. So yeah,
glad to be of service.
Exactly. Thank you, Nate, for that great sort of intro into our sponsors. Before we get into the main bulk of discussion, we did mention sponsors. We are sponsored by Crunchyroll, I forgot the name of it, J-List, and Japan Crate. So big thanks to them. Forget about what Nate said before. J-List, only you can listen to that. The rest of you guys don't listen to that. Cover your ears. Okay. So, Nate, how did you get involved in anime?
Oh boy, this is a long story. So, let's see. In the early 80s, so like 84, 85, I was like 3 years old. And we had Robotech on TV. We had like, you know, the Thundercats opening, Voltron, things like that. And for me, they were just cartoons. But this kind of aesthetic really like stuck with me. And I didn't really, like, it was just more of the TV shows and the cartoons I grew up with as a kid. But then in 1993, my dad was military. We moved to Okinawa, and that was what hooked me. I got to see tapes of Dragon Ball Z. People had like taped it off of Japanese TV, and it was literally right around the end of the Cell game. So I got to watch Gohan go Super Saiyan 2 live, like the day it aired. And it was, no pun intended, a transformative experience. I have been hooked ever since.
See, that's very interesting. Like, because you mentioned at a young age, right, watching anime and such. Did you understand those tapes?
Not really, no. I knew barely, like, tiny, tiny, tiny bit of Japanese just from, like, reading, you know, like, here's the basic words when you first moved there. I was, like, 11, you know? I didn't really, like, take any classes or study or anything like that. As I spent more time living in Japan, you know, if you actually go out to restaurants and, like, take Japanese classes, I took them when I was in middle school. And even I went to, like, adult conversational Japanese classes with my mom, which was very interesting and, like, helpful. So I'm nowhere near fluent. I'm not fluent, but I'm comfortable with Japanese, I think is a better way to put it. So I was able to learn more through watching anime, watching TV, you know, watching sports, things like that. It would pick up talking with off-base friends or family, people from our church, that kind of thing. And it picked up more and more. And when we moved in 96, so we moved from Okinawa to Hawaii, which is a good like middle ground, because there's still a lot of imported Japanese stuff. I had a Jump subscription at that point. I was following some titles then, and that helped me with my reading. And I was still taking Japanese courses in high school, so that helped keep the practice up while I was still, you know, reading manga, buying VHS tapes. I had a job throughout a lot of high school. I was either a paper boy or I was doing, like, you know, I worked at like a, it was called Chopstick Express. It's like a cheap Panda Express knockoff for a little while. And like, so I had extra money and I would buy anime tapes. And so I just stayed with it. I stayed with it for a long time, and I've been through multiple phases of the anime fandom in the US, from when there was almost nothing, when like Viz had a handful of titles and they were all flipped. And like there were some VHS tapes in the special interest section, all the way up to, you know, the DVD, then piracy and the crash of the DVD industry for anime, up to now with streaming and this resurgence of physical media with companies like Discotech, who keep older titles alive, and Funimation having these reasonably priced box sets, amazingly priced box sets, and all these different things, physical media being this very special thing for collectors, and having these vast, vast libraries available for fans. It's having been through all those different areas, there is never a better time than now to be an anime fan, especially to start off. Like, it is amazing right now.
I'm not sure really, Tyson, maybe he can attest to this, but when we started watching anime, I think this podcast really allowed us to kind of get into more anime and stuff like that. I really wasn't into anime. I thought anime was like, forgive me for saying this, guys, anyone that's listening, I'm sorry. Anime was like weeb shit, if that makes sense. Like, it was such a shameful thing.
Here's the thing. With a lot of fandoms, you get a certain subset who are kind of embarrassing. And that's difficult. I think the toughest part about being, or here's a better way to put it. If you want someone to try out anime, the barrier does not come from a long series like One Piece or, you know, a bloody or violent, whatever, like nothing like that. There is kind of a barrier of creepiness you got to overcome.
Creepiness.
And that's a good, I mean, that's the best way I can put it. Because like, if I tell somebody I like Star Wars, right? Everybody likes Star Wars. Like, it's the most like mainstream thing that many, many people enjoy, right? If I say I like anime, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, like you can think of it in one of several ways. Either I like kiddie shit like Dragon Ball or Yu Yu Hakusho. I actually really, really like that stuff. Like, that is like my jam. I love shonen action. Or I like these shows, these teehee titty shows about cute girls doing cute things cutely, and I don't know. It's not good optics, right? If you just come out and say that without the qualifier, right? I like this, without giving the, you know, there's immediately a stereotype that comes into people's heads, and I don't really blame them for that. So it is harder to get people into anime if you are not willing to actually like show what attracts you to it. Even if it is like slice of life shows with cute girls, it's not because, oh God, they're going to crucify him for this. It's not because it's a bunch of lonely fucks who never talk to women, right? There are people who actually like have social skills, but really enjoy slice of life shows, right? So you gotta be ready to just explain. There's more upfront explanation to do if you tell someone you like anime, especially if you're working in a Japanese company.
We recently did an episode with my co-host Kevin on Orimo, and the first season, really kind of taking all that incest shit to the side and focusing really on this whole otaku culture and stuff. And yeah, he was mentioning about his experience, you know, coming out as an anime fan and having to hide himself, you know, like, if that makes sense, like hiding himself from the society. And I've kind of gone past that point. Like, I don't give a fuck anymore. Like,
exactly.
You know, I'm such, like, I've become this weeb, you know what I mean? So I just don't care. But I found that a lot of people, if you say, hey, I like anime, and they're like, oh, you anime, like that hentai shit, like you know what I mean? Like, that's what they say, or sometimes they'll mock it, or you know what I mean? So it's
exactly
like, it kind of puts that sort of stigma, and you don't want to say, oh shit, I like anime, because people will be like, oh, so you like tentacle porn? Like, that's the first thing that mm-hmm. hits people's head. And that's nothing wrong, like, if you like hentai, that's up to you, but I don't understand why people associate it with such negative, like, things, if that makes sense. I don't know where that link comes in.
It is, I see where you're coming from, and it is kind of weird, because, like, if you look at the most popular titles, like, a lot of people like anime. There are tons of people, like, famous people who love, like, say, Dragon Ball or Attack on Titan or One Punch Man or something like that. There are sports stars who are watching One Piece. You know, their anime is popular. Like, that's there's no other way to put it. Anime is popular, anime is known. But I think to the non-fandom side of things, where it's like, okay, here's another way to look at it. I like Star Trek, right? I love Star Trek. I am more of a Star Trek person than a Star Wars person. But if I say I'm a Star Trek fan, like I'm a hardcore Star Trek fan, what image pops into your head first?
You know, I don't know. I don't know anything about Star Trek, so I really wouldn't
know. Oh, maybe this is a UK thing, right? So like in the UK and in the US to some extent, Doctor Who, right? Doctor Who is generational sci-fi epic that's been around forever. There are many versions of it, and like the fans can get very vocal and kind of embarrassing. Star Trek is the same thing. Right? Like there's many, many generations of Star Trek fans, people who grew up with it, people who are just getting into it, the gatekeeping, the unwelcome attitude that many older fans can have. It's changing, you know, as fandoms do. It's changing and becoming more welcoming, but there is kind of a, you know, anime has that same problem. You know, there are people who are like, oh, you're not a real fan if you don't watch, you know, if you haven't been watching for this long. And it's like, that's not really what it is. Like, if you like it, you're a real fan. It doesn't matter how long you've been watching. I've been watching for a really long time, but it does not make me more or less a fan than someone who just started watching something on Toonami last week and is excited for the next thing, you know?
No, I completely agree with you. And to kind of add on to your point, it's like, we also see in this community, there's like issues with subs and dubs, and a lot of people are like, oh, fuck you, you're not a real fan if you watch dubs. Like, enjoy the way you enjoy it, right?
Well, a lot of people have started on dubs, and there's many other reasons. Like, sometimes people want to be able to actually like get other things done while they're watching anime, so thus it's dub. Like, it's fine. You can also dislike dubs too, which is the thing. Like, I'm not a big fan of certain dubs, but that doesn't make them bad or the people who work on them bad, unless you're Vic Mignogna, and then, you know, like, it, you know.
Like I said, enjoy what you enjoy. That's just how I see it. Tyson,
yes.
He hasn't been talking for a long time. I feel like me and Nate have been going on for fucking ages, but...
No, it's fine, it's fine. I like listening to Nate talk, so I'm just gonna step back right here. Just
but
gonna
you know
listen.
What, Tyson? I really want to get you involved a little bit more. I know your story about how you got into anime, because it's the same sort of thing. Like, if you're on Kunai, we kind of grew together in terms of our anime tastes kind of flourished on Kunai, etc., but... I want to know where you started. How did Tyson become an anime fan? How did he become a weeb? Do you consider yourself a weeb?
Somewhat. And like, I don't hide the fact that I like anime. So I'm the kind of person that goes to work with anime shirts. I have gone with My Hero Academia shirts. I had gone with Naruto shirts. Like, I don't hide the fact that I like anime. And it has, I think, a lot to do with how ostracized I felt as an anime fan when I was a kid. So,
okay.
And I may have told this story on Kunai before, but I'm just gonna put it here for the record. I'm being an on and off anime fan, so my earliest memories with consuming something that is anime, although young me certainly didn't consider it to be that way, was Dragon Ball. Like, I'm sorry, not Dragon Ball, but Dragon Ball Z. Mm-hmm. Like, I was way too young for when the original Dragon Ball aired. So we're talking about 93, 94. I would have been about 5 or 6 at that time. I can't count. I'm sorry. So when I was like in elementary school, like my vivid memory was of running to from school. I got out of 3 and I live about 15 minutes away from what was my house at the day. and all I wanted to do was to watch the kids show, and they aired Dragon Ball Z, and they aired Pokemon, the original Pokemon. This would have been about 95 or 96. So from there on, so earlier me wouldn't have considered Dragon Ball Z like an anime, but like as I grew older, I started to accept it for the fact it is. And while I was excited for Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon, I would say, it kind of pains me to say this, and we can have a conversation about that. I would say my formative anime is what we call in this side of the world, Samurai X. So it was the Spanish dub from Mexico of Rurouni Kenshin. I would say that is my formative anime. The reason why I say it's shameful is because of the developments with Watsuki.
That's something that I've had to come to terms with. When I mentioned that I had a Jump subscription when I lived in Hawaii, it was specifically to follow Rurouni Kenshin. I mean, like, I think we can still say yes, it was important to us, but there's also the reckoning we have to take now, like you're doing right now, you know?
Like, I literally woke up early to watch Rurouni Kenshin. This is like the type of Saturday morning cartoons, and what Puerto Rico broadcasters consider to be cartoon would be a very violent anime from the 1990s. So like at that time it was cool. After that, since I didn't have cable at my house, that's how in order to watch Toonami and whatnot, this would have been about 2000 or 2001, something like that. So my parents were divorced. My mom just earned enough to get by. I never had cable at my mom's house, but I did have cable over at my dad's house. So it turns out that something I used to do is that the VCR recorders, they have a timer in which you can tell, okay, at this time you record this thing. I did that a lot with a lot of Toonami shows, namely Outlaw Star from what I can remember. And I mean, at least of the overall fandom, I guess there's a discussion to be had about better space opera. There are people who don't call Outlaw Star a space opera. I'm still haven't come to terms with that. Or, Cowboy Bebop is better. I'm sitting here like, I don't have an opinion. Like, I definitely have nostalgia for Outlaw Star. I actually own the Funimation release of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, my next stage in what was my anime fandom was Outlaw Star, some of the Toonami shows that are around the time. I'm sorry, I can't mention really any names right now. And then around 2002, 2003, I got a Jump subscription myself. That's where I started to be exposed to Bobo. I'm not sure how many Bobobos are there. I watched the anime for that. It was on Toonami. I got exposed to Hikaru no Go. Like, I love that show. I wish I could own it all on Blu-ray, but I haven't found it. Then I had a kind of a falling off. Around this time I was already in high school, and like Team Me started to see that as that's some kids shit. Just leave it. Mostly looking back and thinking, oh, it's just a phase that I had when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And turns out that the anime that got me back in was Death Note. So I remember reading it in Jump when it was like debuting. This was around late 2004, early 2005. And I was like, oh my God, a cerebral show. This is good. And I eventually was announced, hey, if this is going to be getting anime by Madhouse. I'm like, what? Awesome. So this is where I started to, since Death Note never got a proper like Toonami release, like the methods that I used to consume anime back in the day were not available. So if like my late teen me was just looking through torrent sites and whatnot to find the latest episode of Death Note as it aired. But back in the day, I could have used a service like Crunchyroll to just watch it on the internet. But back in the day, I was left to just downloading the episodes from torrents and just burning them on DVD so I can infinitely watch them at my house. Because remember, guys, at this time, my mom still didn't have cable. I'll be honest, we didn't have internet at my mom's house until I entered college. So we're talking about 2007, 2008, in which I finally convinced her to say, hey, having internet is a good investment. I know you don't like me to gem up the dial-up line because I'm way too obsessed with what I'm doing on the internet. So let's go ahead and have you pay for, because at that moment I wasn't employed. So I'm not sure how I convinced her, but I did. Probably was with the college stuff. And so I had a DVD player back at my mom's house, and I just watched them over and over and over, just looking forward for when I got back into my dad's house to say, I need to download this. I need to download new episodes. But it would have been a one-off. So I fell out again when I started college and whatnot. And at about 2012, 2013, I couldn't tell you what was the show that brought me back in again. I would say, for lack of a more specific show, I think it was Shippuden. Shippuden, I remember like taking about a month and a half watching about 130 episodes on Hulu just to catch up. And that's where I started to get into other types of shows. So that's when I got introduced to Attack on Titan. That's where I started watching Free. And like, okay, and now that Crunchyroll was like a thing, then I started to consume more anime. Everything from that point has been smooth sailing. Like there have been ebbs, and there have been ebbs in like my fandom. Like my whole story is just being in and out. Pretty much of that desire to stay like up to date in what animes are airing and whatnot. And at that moment, I had a Call of Duty podcast, and I was looking for a new pet project to do. I approached Bish, and voila, here's Kunai. Here's a bunch of shows that I haven't watched before. A bunch of shows that I watch, and I really want a platform to express my love onto it. And Sino, I'm actually really happy that this is continuing, even if I'm not like involved on a day-to-day basis. So really, Bish, thank you.
That's all right.
As happy as this sounds, like
you shouldn't be thanking me. I should be thanking you. Because without you, this podcast wouldn't exist, and it's really a team effort. And just for those that are listening, exclusive thing, we might be doing an episode for Rent a Girlfriend. I haven't even seen that anime yet, Tyson, so I'm looking forward to that.
Also, yeah, it was very nice getting to hear your origin story, as it were. So like, that's really cool.
I like that. Yeah, I didn't even hear most of it. I only thought that Tyson got into anime like really late, but I didn't know about all of this intro. Because for me, I kind of had something similar, but it was very different because obviously I grew up in like an Egyptian Sudanese household. And a lot of anime that we'd watch, because we had satellite TV, a lot of the anime that we'd watch was in Arabic, right? Or in French. And yeah. So it would be on services like Toonami and stuff like that, and Cartoon Network and whatnot. But it was never really advertised as anime. And even in Arabic, it was film cartoon. Like it's animated cartoons, right? That's how it was always done. And they would always dub it in Arabic, and they would change the intros as well to make it more friendly for the Middle East, which was weird because some shows just didn't make sense when they change everything. Like they change the names and they change everything. It just didn't make much sense to me. Like, yeah, some shows were really popular, like Pokemon and Gundam and things like that. It just, I don't know. I grew up with a lot of Arabs and stuff. So when you speak to them and you're like, hey, do you watch anime? And they're like, no, I don't watch that shit. But then they're like, but you've seen Gundam, right? You've seen Gundam Wing. Like, yeah, man, I love Gundam Wing. And I'm like, you know that's anime, right? They're like, no, that's an Arabic cartoon, dude. And I'm like, the fuck? Like, so a lot of people tend to have this notion, because it's been localized in such a way to be tailored to that kind of community, that they feel that those cartoons are part of like their cultural identity, if that makes sense, which is very interesting. But I didn't really consider those shows watching as a kid like as anime, you know what I mean?
Well, they were your cartoons, right?
They were cartoons.
So this kind of makes sense though, because after I came back from Okinawa, like a year or so later, Dragon Ball Z started airing in English. And I am not, there's a whole mess of people, tons and tons and tons of fans that blew up, right? And there are people who will only see the English version of Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z as the version of Dragon Ball Z, right? And for me, that's the new kid on the block, and I'm used to the Japanese version. So it's this weird, like I'm like, yeah, man, I love Dragon Ball. And like, I grew up with the Japanese voices, and like the American voices sound weird to me. And I hear everybody else, all these people here, where they're like, nah, man, the English voices are way better. And I just, you know, it's one of those things. And I totally feel that about Gundam being, quote unquote, not anime. I get that.
Yeah. No, exactly. And it's like, I didn't really kind of get into more, like, I say, quote unquote, anime until like 2012. Because when I was in high school, I was really into Japanese gaming, like, you know, games like, I fucking forgot the names of the games now, like Dynasty Warriors, etc. I'm really into that. And I would kind of get beaten up at school for liking like Japanese shit. So I thought, you know what, I'm not going to get into anime. Like, there's all these kids are like, yeah, dude, watch anime. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to get killed at school. You know what I mean? Like, I'm already getting beaten up. I don't want to get beaten up even more for watching anime. Mm-hmm. And then I just got into a really dark place. And a friend of mine, Daniil, he came up to me and he was like, dude, watch Toradora. It will fix your problems. And I was like, "This, what the fuck?" And I spent the time and I just watched Toradora, I think, for like maybe a good solid 24 hours straight, just rewatching, just trying to figure out what this anime is. As silly as this sounds, it kind of changed my life. And then, I don't know, it just went on from there. And then Tyson came up to me about this whole idea for an anime podcast. And I was like, yeah, we'll do it.
Actually, you bringing up Toradora as something that like changed your life and turned things around and made like a very positive effect on you. I actually want to ask Tyson, what's a show that has, if it's an anime, more ideal since it's in this like realm of discussion, but what is a show or piece of media that really like turned things around in a positive way for you?
I can't really say that I had like a big story with Toradora, but there is a life event that happened. You know, Bish knows about it, and I'm not gonna say anything more than that. There was this show that helped me to cope with loss. It's like the funniest thing, because it isn't even about how to cope with the loss of someone that you love, but it was this show called Gourmet Girls Graffiti. So I was at the time I was in a binge of watching a bunch of chef shows, and I ran across this one and say, oh, I haven't watched this one. Let's see what it's all about. And then the life event happened, and I was just like, so it was so down, trying to figure out what I will do next. But then the main character of this show is trying to cope with the loss of her grandmother, and the way that they do that is by speaking with different relatives. And the main character is a very good cook. She likes to experiment in the kitchen, but every time that she was going over to her grandma's shrine at her apartment building, just trying to confess her to confess how hard it has been, or trying to like a happy conversation about it, that break me. That really, really break me. And it really did a lot to like help me cope with the situation that was going on at the time. And that's probably as closest as I can get to a Bish and Toradora story, like an anime that meant a lot to me. I can say for a fact that there are a bunch of shows that like no TV drama series or whatever has moved me to tears in the way that anime has done. And like out of the top of my head, like I can't recall like the shows that I can legit tell you that they have moved me to tears, but Gourmet Girls Graffiti is a particular highlight, and probably the closest in which I can legitimately say this anime has made an impact on me.
It's very interesting, Tyson, that you mentioned like anime that like kind of brought you to tears, because as soon as you said that, and because I don't know, like I kind of remember Boku no Hero, like My Hero Academia, right? I know it sounds really weird because it's just like My Hero Academia, fun shonen show, right? But within like the first two episodes, I started crying because I saw All Might for the first time. You know, when you see skinny All Might in that sort of weakened position, I saw that and I just started crying. I explained it more in the episode, but it brought back memories of like, you know, seeing my dad when he was like ill, etc. So I thought when I saw All Might like that skinny, I was like, shit, All Might has cancer. Like, that's the first thing that hit my head. And then I was just like, oh. But it's like, for me, anime does have that power to move you on a personal level. And I think when people have that connection with anime on a personal level, they kind of appreciate it more. like I said, like for me, if it wasn't for anime like Toradora, I don't think I would have appreciated it or even be doing this, you know, this podcast, because those kind of things move people, I guess. I don't know how to phrase it, but I think I understood
what you meant, and I appreciate you for actually like opening up about something so personal like that, because that's where you see it, and that's where it hits you, right? Is because you are dealing with these things, these very difficult and like kind of taxing things in your life, and when you see it in, you know, you said like shonen escapism, My Hero Academia, but that is a very emotional show. Like it does deal with a lot of topics, especially in those early episodes of, you know, like bullying and like the loss of your dreams, and like you find out that your hero or someone who's very important to you, like they're sick. You know, that's a scary thought.
I kind of hate to admit it, because even during the middle of the episode, just for people that don't know, when we were recording the episode, we recorded it in three segments, but we edited in it in such a way that it was a full episode. But because we're focusing on one season, I just couldn't handle, like when we got to that point on the episode of the podcast, when I just had to speak about that kind of stuff, it just hit me all at once, even though I'd written it down in my notes, but it hit me all at once and I just couldn't continue with the recording. Yeah, it's a very powerful thing.
I just wanted to say my primary motivator behind me being such a hardcore free fan like the swimming show is that a lot of people may see that as a Megase Fuyoshi show. Oh, it's like cute boys and cute boys swimming and whatnot. Okay, I'll give it an element of that. There certainly is. I'm not gonna take that away. But what I saw in that is that as a person who deeply values friendship, like to the extent Haru has reached out to Rin to kind of like save him from this slump, even though just Rin rejecting him at every turn, like, and I'm not sure if I got this across on the episode that we did in season one and season two, we did two shows of that, is that I want people to see that show as a true testament of friendship. And instead of like being, oh, I'm just ogling a body, saying like, okay, there is an element of that. But what if you were to watch it this way? I can say that Free has moved me to tears as well. Like when Rin is crying just out of frustration after fighting with Haru, like that broke me too. Like, and again, I say this as a person who deeply values friendships like the one Haru and Rin has. So like, it's like, finally, I see something that I value so much in this show that I would never see, because we're all too it's mostly cultural, I'll say, that oh, men cannot have friendships, like that's homosexual and whatnot. And dude, I am so happy to live in a world in which this is more accepting nowadays.
Oh yeah.
I'm definitely glad. And I mean, this aired back in 2013, in which there was still the stigma around that. And oh man, like I get so emotional just thinking about that.
For me, when you suggested Free, even the first and second episodes, I was not necessarily dreading it. I thought that, oh, this is just going to be mainly just fan service and there is not going to be substance to it, right? And then watching the show itself, I fell in love with it because, you know, as you mentioned, there is such a value on friendship and these kind of relationships that the characters have with one another. And there's something special about that. Not like, at least for me, when I was kind of new to anime, that it felt like something that I wanted, if that makes sense. It's like something that's lacking in my life, you know? Like I needed that sort of friendship with people. And it's, like I said, I'm glad that you mentioned it and I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is very important. But that being said, we're gonna go on a little ad break. You guys are gonna hear an ad, a lovely Crunchyroll ad, and then we will be back for the second segment, which I kind of already forgot what was it about, so.
It is panels.
Oh, it's the panels. Okay, thank you, Tyson. We're going to be talking about Nate's panels, and then we'll go on a break now. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Crunchyroll. Go and check them out at getlifepodcast.com/Crunchyroll for a 14-day free trial of Crunchyroll premium service. That means anime without ads, 1080p HD. You can watch it on all your favorite devices, your TVs, your phones, whatever. Even if you want to watch it on your Chromecast, you can as well. That's amazing. Go and check them out. 14-day free trial. You've got the most diverse collection of anime and manga on the internet. So go and check them out. It's a no-brainer, lads. GetLifePodcast.com/Crunchyroll. Thank you, Crunchyroll, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. This episode of the podcast is also brought to you by the lovely people at Japan Crate. Japan Crate offers a unique experience of Japan through monthly crates filled with candy. And who doesn't love candy, right? Japan Crate brings you a delicious selection of snacks every month. You can check it out on our YouTube channel for $35 a month. And you can cancel anytime, but I don't know why you would want to. Learn more at getlifepodcast.com/Japan Crate. Remember, use the code GALP for $3 off on new subscriptions. So getlifepodcast.com/Japan Crate. Use the code GALP for $3 off. And if you want to check out what snacks that you get in the crates, go and check out our YouTube channels. Links will be in the description. So go and check them out. Thank you, Japan Crate, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Okay, now we are back from the break. My apologies, by the way, because it's like 3 a.m. in the United Kingdom at the moment, so I'm feeling a bit flustered. I haven't had much sleep, but we're talking about Nate's panels. Just so people know, right, I only knew about Nate because when we started our Crunchyroll sponsorship, Nate helped us out a lot. Nate, what did you actually do for Crunchyroll? Just so I know, because I didn't
I was the customer support lead for a long while. I think from 2014 to 2018, I want to say. And then after that, I was the after I left customer support, I was the features editor for the news team. So I did a lot of I went back to my news writing. Okay, originally I was a contractor Crunchyroll starting 2010 or 2011, I think. And I was writing a newsletter and on Crunchyroll News. And then 2014, I moved to San Francisco to become their customer support guy, worked my way up to customer support lead. That was when I was helping you guys and got you set up with your free membership. And sponsorship, stuff like that, and connected you to the right people, etc., etc. And then after that, I went and wrote for the news team for a while and did editing, and that was a lot of fun.
To be honest with you, I didn't know who Nate was, speaking to him via email, and then one day Tyson's like, "Yeah, I should check out this Nate guy." I was like, "Oh, okay, cool."
I've known Nate since about 2017. Wow. I'm gonna
say. Sounds about right.
And you correct me if I'm wrong. Nate is this person who has this fun conversation, and I'm like, okay. I'm gonna jump in, talk, and just hope my mind with this deal. It seems that we are in the same wavelength about a lot of stuff. I do have a question, Nate, and I'm curious. Was the editor's position that you had in Crunchyroll also a managerial one or not?
To an extent, I would manage a team of features writers and make sure that they were, performing well or, kind of guiding what we're writing about for a particular week and making sure that the right articles were being promoted and, that kind of thing. So it was definitely a managerial experience, but more on a middle management kind of setting.
Okay, so nothing like your boss and you have people under you who report to you, or the concept of middle manager. I'm not really.
Middle management means I did have direct reports. There were writers who would report to me and give me their assignments, and I'd do reports on their assignments and things like that, edit everything that they had, and then make sure that all these things, all these different moving parts work. Now, obviously, I did report to people higher up the chain, but I still had a team that worked for me.
Gotcha. It's just that I've never heard that referred as middle manager, probably a difference between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. But yeah, I'm sorry for that tangent. Let's move on.
Oh, no worries.
Nate, I just wanted to know, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but can you tell us what was the weirdest support inquiry that you've had?
Oh, boy. Okay, so let's see. I'm trying to think of one that, because we did get some. I dislike the idea of making fun of customers, right? Because if they have a legitimate problem, even if it is something that is kind of should be easy to understand for anyone else, right? My job was to help them and make sure that they got their thing taken care of. So while I got a couple that were pretty simple in the turn it off and then turn it back on again kind of level, it was nothing like that caused caused me, you know, any sort of grief or difficulty. I actually legitimately enjoy customer service and helping people. Mm. But the ones that frustrated me the most were, this is a common community management thing. If you get banned and the mods have receipts of your dumb behavior, crying to me on Twitter is not going to make me reinstate your account. It's going to make me check with the mods and look at your receipts. And I had to deal with so much of that, and it was just so constant. And it was, I think for me, it was not funny, it was frustrating. Mm. Like, customers, even when they get weird, are just being, you know, they have a legitimate request or problem or whatever, I can help that. But if you're being dumb and you get removed from the community, which is a totally understandable, if I make a fool of myself in the store, right, I'm gonna get removed from the store. Yeah. And I may not be welcome back in that store.
Right.
This is just common sense. I'm not going to go cry to one of the other managers who's not the one that's there to see if they'll let me back in. That's just how it works. And people think that if you like try to yell at someone on Twitter, they're going to cave. And that's not really how it works. So that's my takeaway of working in customer support.
I was expecting like more like funny things.
I'm not going to lie. The funny stuff happens during cons. It is not like the customer support stuff. Events is where the funny shit happens. Like, oh God. Ah, think. See, now I'm just, when I think of cons, I'm thinking of all my horror stories, but now I'm like, okay, what actually funny that happened? There was that time I played a prank on a coworker. We made these little stickers of her that made her look like, you know, an advice dog meme. Cause she had like, it made her look like a puppy, right? And so I took this picture with this goofy face picture of her and put it on the rainbow sticker, right? And so we called her Advice, her name, right? And, you know, names are changed to protect the innocent. And when she came to a con with us, I told people to go up and ask her for advice. I was like, be stealthy about it, be sly about it. So like a dozen people go up and are asking like, what's a good place to eat? What's a good booth to go to? And so she's answering all these questions and she's just like, man, everybody's asking me all these questions today. And a friend of mine, an actual friend of mine, put this up and destroyed the joke because she goes up to her and says, I'm just supposed to ask you for advice or something. I don't know, you know, because she was, you know, and I, this coworker, her head like snaps around 180 degrees and fucking glares at me. And I'm just like, I'm busy working. I didn't see shit. And so I had multiple Dwights at the office, none of it related to work, you know, customer support stuff. So I don't have funny stories about customers as much as I have funny stories of punking my coworkers, who I love.
Fair enough. I think that's very interesting. Like for me, cons were, I don't know, like no one really knows what I look like apart from Tyson and a few other people. So when I go to conventions, no one knows who I am, but I have had people like notice me by my voice, if that makes sense. And that's a bit weird sometimes. But I think in terms of like the weirdest shit that I've seen at a convention, I saw Jesus at one con at MCM London. Took a picture with Jesus and he told me to fuck off. So that was a bit... I was like, Jesus, take a photo with me. He was like, fuck off, mate. I already forgave your sins. And he just walked off. I was like, come on, Jesus.
Beautiful. Our Lord, here, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he did not give a fuck. And then I was like, why is there Jesus at MCM Comic-Con? And then I realized, I think he was cosplaying as Jesus from Saint Young Men, which makes a lot of sense. At least I hope he was cosplaying as Saint Young Men Jesus. But, you know.
Sometimes people just cosplay as Jesus.
I mean, why at Comic-Con, though? I mean, it's so weird. It's like, why would you do that?
But it is a thing that happens.
For me, when I saw that, I was shocked. I was just like, not because it's Jesus, but just because it's like, it was a really good cosplay. The guy grew out his hair and everything. And I was like, wow.
That's impressive.
It was commitment. And I saw a lot of other stuff. Like sometimes I make jokes on this podcast and like you see it in real life. And I'm like, did that person listen to the podcast and make that meme real? Because Tyson, I'm not sure if you remember, but there was always this meme an internal meme that I was saying, look, we should do like hairy legged cosplays. Like we dress like Hatsune Miku or Nico Yazawa with hairy legs, and we go out and we do that.
And that started happening. It's like,
and it started happening. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why are people doing this? I wanted to do this. Like literally this year. Well, not this year. The last MCM Comic Con was in 2019. I saw a Nico Yazawa with hairy legs, and I was just like, oh my god. I was like, this is not real. This cannot be real. And I want to take a picture with them. I did, but I was told I can't post it on Twitter, so I didn't. But that does exist. I'm glad that you are taking those jokes on board.
I think you managed to talk Elliot into doing an eco cosplay or what's
it? No. Do you know what it was? They were recording the Crunchycast. Look, uh-huh. I'll tell you the whole story with Elliot. So Elliot, he was working at Viewster at the time, and then we were talking about Nico and how Nico is trash, etc. So that became that started from there. And then when he was working for Crunchyroll, they were doing the Crunchycast or whatever, and they wanted questions in, etc. So I submitted a question. I said, can you do an impression of Nico?
And Elliot actually did it.
But you know what? I think it was Reyna that set them up, because Reyna saw it and she said, yes, you got to do this. So that's what happened. And I'm glad it happened. And I've got that. And the thing is, they clipped it at the beginning and they pasted it at the beginning. So I was like, yes, I'm glad they did something.
Good job. That was on you. Good job. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of myself too. That will never happen again, though.
I miss those guys. I miss Reyna and Elliot. They were cool. Also a bunch of you other CR people too. You're also cool. All the other guys.
I remember feeling so awkward, and I probably told you this, Nate, but I'm coming on the record with it that when I traveled to Crunchyroll Expo for the first one in 2017, like I didn't know, like nobody knew how I look, and then I was just hovering around the customer support deck because I had an issue with my since I booked to Crunchyroll, I was supposed to get some goodies at the hotel, and I was like back and forth between the VIP. I was in between three different booths. I remember ended up a customer support, and I told them, hey, I booked you the Crunchyroll website. I was told to expect these goodies. Do we have an estimate, or when is it that supposed to happen? And then I don't remember if it was one of your coworkers or it was you, the one who gave me the answer. So I took my answer. Okay, cool. I just went back into the event. And then about a couple hours later, I was like, there was another person in the booth, man in the booth, but you were tending to the teddy bear. What was his name?
Fred.
Fred, yes.
Fred is gone now. Fred is no longer with us. They tossed him when they moved offices.
Oh, no.
Everyone bore one out for Fred the Crunchyroll Bear and his gigantic brother Ned.
Are they like Costco bears?
They were giant Costco bears, yeah.
So I remember going back into the customer service. I think it was just before I left for the day. I just wanted to introduce myself. I said something dumb like, personal privilege. Hey, Nate, I'm Tyson. And I was like, oh my God, did I really said that?
Oh yeah, that's right. I was like, oh shit, hey, what's up?
I was like, oh my God, I don't know how this dude is gonna react, but I said something dumb and like, no, this is not gonna happen.
Well, like, here's the thing. I'm very easy to approach, and that's why every time, like, con season comes around and, like, people are like, I'm going to the same con as you, I'm like, literally just say hi. That's it. That's all you need to do. And I think that there needs to be more, like, available for fans to be comfortable with meeting Twitter mutuals and things like that, because there's I don't know, like, you have social courtesy, Tyson. Like, you came up to me and you said hello, and I knew, like, okay, I can talk to this dude, right? It's not like some kind of, are we sure about that?
Nate, what if Tyson came up to introduce himself dressed up as you? Like, he was in full Nate Ming cosplay. How would you react then?
That would be a little weird, but I'm very easy to cosplay. You need long hair, you need glasses, and a graphic tee of some kind, and jeans, and either Converse or Rockport shoes. Those are the two, like, specific pieces of the outfit. So that would be a little weird. Maybe you'd also have, like, boxing gloves on or something. But, like, I don't know, Nate Ming cosplay would be very... somewhere on the line between flattering and weird.
Now that I said that, it's gonna happen. You know this.
I mean, I'm hearing the suggestion and I already feel awkward by doing that.
I'm just saying, Tyson. I'm just saying.
No, bitch. So here's something that you should know about me. I cannot grow my hair out as long as Nate. I don't grow, like, I don't grow this L'Oreal hair. I grow an afro, okay? That's not gonna happen. Like,
speaking of Nate's L'Oreal hair, though, Nate, how do you keep the hair? Like,
I've had long hair since 2003. I've been growing my hair out all that time, and it is a point of pride for me, and it makes women jealous. I love it because I take very good care of hair.
So what's that routine?
Not as difficult as you'd think. I shampoo it every 2 to 3 days. I still wash my hair regularly, but that does not mean I shampoo my hair, and I condition it between once and twice a week. I regularly brush it. I make sure to use shampoo that works very well with my hair. It's really the regular brushing and just letting it grow out and conditioning hair. So that way, conditioner is basically like lotion for your hair. It keeps the ends good and not like split or gross or anything like that. Other people, their hair requires a lot more care. Like it requires like detangler or like, you know, different kinds of shampoo or like scalp cream, things like that. Like I'm lucky, I don't really have, like if I get gross, because like, oh man, I have a story about the one time in recent history that I just like went full gremlin and didn't do shit for a week. But like, I don't have dandruff really. It acts up when it's dry, but like my scalp is easy to take care of. My hair is easier to take care of. So I lucked out. I have beautiful long hair. And yeah, good routine.
Speaking of the shampoo, like what's your favorite? I don't want to say flavor because you don't eat the shampoo, but what's like your favorite like,
smell?
I use Tresemme Deep Cleansing. That is what I use. Or I use the Lush Hockey Puck or the Shampoo Pucks. Okay. I like Oak and Float. That one's really good. Like it smells awful, but it works fantastic on my hair.
So as far as a skincare routine, I don't know why, but I'm just going to throw it out there. This conversation is reminding me about a soap that I used when I was younger and my face was full of acne. And I'm not sure if it's still sold, but it's this Saint Ives bar soap. It's made out of oatmeal, I think it is. It smells so good. It smells so good. I'm not sure why is it that happened that I just stopped using it, but it was like, oh my God, this is like, oh, great.
Something we need to bring up, men, we normalize men talking about taking care of themselves.
Oh yeah, definitely, 100%.
Like men, especially like men in the anime community, like this, the company I'm keeping right now, y'all are good about that, I would assume. But normalize showering, normalize taking care of your skin and your hair because it helps you. I am 37 and people think I haven't even hit 30 yet. And it's
because you're 37?
I am 37.
Dude.
I turned 38 this year.
You clean up.
Oh,
good.
Wow.
You clean up good.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And it is because I take care of myself and I'm not an evil person because hate ages you.
Wise words.
This is pretty much that big bro advice that Nate gets out on Twitter. We have it live here on the podcast, exclusive to our listeners.
Yeah. And now we know what shampoo Nate uses.
Yes.
If you're listening, sponsor us.
Yes. Lush Soak and Float. Do they actually, let me look that up right now. Lush Soak and Float.
Yeah, they sell it in the UK.
They do. They have shampoo bars and pucks. Yeah, Soak and Float smells funky, but is outstanding.
You know what? I use them in terms of Lush, there's this one beard, shampoo thing. I forgot the name of it now. It has like pineapple in it and I like it. I stopped growing my beard now because of COVID.
Makes sense.
I hate it.
Oh no. It has been the opposite for me. Like since I don't have to be going into the office and I was kind of growing a beard before COVID hit, I started to grow out the beard because I wanted to see for myself, okay, how long can my beard get? And it goes at a respectable level to the point in which I needed to start using beard oil and whatnot. But then I started to find out that then I started to play with my facial hair, like do these little curls and do like some sort of whatchamacallit. Like I started to use my facial hair like as a fidget toy, and I was like, I shouldn't really be touching my face in the age of COVID. So there are times in which I let it grow for like 2 or 3 months, and then I start playing around with my beard hair, and then it has to come off. It has to come off. Take a trimmer. It's off.
How long does it grow within the 2 or 3 months?
As I mentioned before, I don't grow long hair. Like I don't have like I grow afros, and on the beard situation is the same. So probably the biggest that I've grown it to is about probably around 7 to 8 centimeters. That's about as long as I had left. And this would be like growing it for a couple months and using beard oil and whatnot to keep it hydrated. Hopefully not have to play. But this is where I found out something about myself that I cannot for the life of me grow a mustache. I cannot.
Oh, same.
So you know how people like their mustache like grow evenly and like you can do like styling with some hair that grows out of your mustache and converges into your chin hair. I cannot do that. And like my mustache, I can get a busty mustache if I let it grow. But it turns out that when I trim, usually my mustache is the first thing to go because like it doesn't grow evenly. I don't know how to. like entice the pores to actually grow that hair evenly. I heard a lot about a house solution to use where I'm from, that that's called as aceite de puerco. Like just rub that as a lotion. So it's like pig oil. That's probably the closest translation. I found that too disgusting to do it to myself.
Like
I have also heard lard. Like it's a good it's a good thing to entice hair growth.
But you're gonna get a lot of spots like acne.
Yeah, I never felt comfortable with the idea myself. And you know, since I am getting into, I wouldn't say it, so. I'm not in my late 30s. I'm not as old as Nate. I'm only 32.
It's a bit hard.
No, I'm not critiquing the age. I'm just saying. I'm not critiquing the age. Age makes you wiser, folks. Age makes you wiser. I thought to myself, okay, I don't want to rock the baby face look anymore. I actually want to start playing with how different I can look. So first thing that I always did was, okay, let's play with the beard. That's usually the thing to grow. I started playing with haircuts as well. Like, I haven't gone full quarantine haircut in which I go bald. Like, I have seen people go bald. I don't think that's the look for me. But yeah. But I have told my barber, hey, why did you do this? Why did you do this? So that when I'm back into society, they can say, Tyson, you changed. And I'm like, did I? I just brush up my looks a little bit while I was in quarantine. Those are fun experiments to do. I would invite anyone who just looking for a look. Hey, facial hair is there. If you can grow it, start to play around with it. See if it's something that you like. And if facial hair is not for you, that's okay too.
You know what, Tyson? I envy you in terms of your facial hair, because not many people may know this, but I shave in the morning and then by evening stubble would have grown back, and it's genetic, so it's like it's insane. But if I leave it a week, I'm already rocking a full beard, and it's it's the worst. So it is a lot of maintenance. Like when I was in university, I was a bit of a slob, so I just kept it growing, and it just kind of got to my stomach, and it started parting in the middle, kind of like Yosemite Sam from like
Looney Tunes. Oh gosh,
it was insane. It was insane. But you know what? The kind of beard that I want is, you know, that kind of like, you know, like a Guan Yu beard, like that kind.
Rich, the Dynasty Warrior character.
Yeah, he's the god of war. Like, I mean, he's a very famous character in Chinese history. I mean, he's a historical figure. But yeah, he has a lovely straight long beard. I'm like, I wish my beard was that silky and like smooth. You know,
it's like taking my hair and sticking it on the front of your face.
Yeah. If I could do that, I would love to do that. That's the thing. I just want that experience, because if I put my hand like on my beard, it's all like rough and like ugh, like it feels like a loofah. That's how I feel. Like, you know what I mean?
So, and I'm gonna segue into this has been a very fun conversation about panels. I hope that the audience has enjoyed it. But I do want to segue into one of Nate's particular passions. So, you know, whenever I think about like these lush long beards, I can't help but thinking of the Kung Fu Master, I believe it was, in Kill Bill. So he's he's like this asshole that goes like lushing his hair and then tempting the bride to attack him. So, and the reason of the segue here is that, Nate, I know that you love these kind of movies. So let's talk a little bit about them. So how exactly did you got into Kung Fu or this kind of movies in which is a lot about the action? Like, I've seen the threads and I kind of want to know the story behind those.
So let's start not at the ending of the story, but like in recent history where I started really writing about action. I write a lot about action. I write a lot about martial arts, and one of my panels at cons in the past is action as storytelling, and how a fight scene tells just as much, if not more, than a dialogue sequence. I was raised as kind of a sheltered kid, so I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies, you know, until I was a little older. I think it was like 15 or so when my folks were like, okay, you can rent R-rated movies from the store. And I started with, my first four were Terminator 2, Alien, and Aliens. And then I went through all the classics. I watched RoboCop, Rambo, like all the different classic action films, even eventually going back, you know, to like 60s, 70s, seeing those action films. Action films are very, very important to me. They are exceptionally fun. fun, and they have a lot of character and a lot to say. So I really, you know, even growing up with martial arts, like my dad was into Tang Sudo and karate and things like that, and that got me into martial arts, but I wasn't particularly allowed to watch action films. So, you know, I would watch eventually, you know, like when I was like old enough to rent these, I rented Bruce Lee movies, Jet Li movies, many different things. I love action films because of the formula. That's one of the most charming and enjoyable things about them. And I feel the same thing applies to like romantic comedies, because they have the same, they have their formula, they have their beats. It's like seeing an extremely well-made burger. You just want to see what pieces people use and how it's put together. And that's why action films are so satisfying to me, martial arts films especially. And so that is why when I watch them, I can be blindly enjoying Arnold's one-liners as he throws a knife at a guy and pins him to a wall and says, "Stick around," and it's wonderful. But there's also like Predator is one of the, like, I can look at it and see Predator as one of these films, a rare movie where Arnold shows vulnerability and fear, and he's not like this ultimate badass killing machine, because he's fighting the ultimate badass killing machine. I love action films and I love talking about them, and that does extend to anime as well, because the Action is Storytelling panel has tons and tons and tons of references in anime action.
Would you say that you rewrite it, the whole concept of that panel, like every year?
Well, I actually cover different things in each panel, like I've only done that panel twice, I believe. So looking at the structure of the panel, initially I talk about what action means and like the arc of storytelling, you know, rising and falling action, a climax, things like that. And then I will apply it to an action scene in a movie that many people have seen. In the first year, it was Enter the Dragon. And then in the next year, it was Star Wars The Force Awakens. So kind of mixing those things up and seeing like what the popular things are, what people have seen, and use that as a reference point, because everybody's seen Force Awakens. So using the last fight in that and talking about how there is a very strong dramatic arc throughout that it was building throughout the entire film that you can use to show here's action storytelling. Then I break down different pieces, different types of character storytelling, and then use an anime example and go step by step through it. In this case, it's Hunter Hunter, which is the Gon versus Hisoka fight in the Heaven's Tower tournament. It is kind of a tournament arc, but the Heaven's Tower arc and the Gon and Hisoka fight where Gon is just trying to land a single punch. And it's such a good arc that covers everything that I talk about in the panel and hopefully teaches the audience something about what to look for in an action sequence. And then I go into like more recommendations and character types and things like that. But yeah, I feel that that's kind of how I approach that.
I am looking through the action and storytelling panel. I see here that Crunchyroll uploaded the 2017 one.
Just a note about that upload, somebody fucked up the volume on that, and so you will have to turn the volume almost all the way up.
Noted. So let's talk about the other panel, which I also had the opportunity to watch it first in 2018. Chicken Soup for the Soul. I don't recall the subtitle. Apologies.
It's Chicken Soup for the Burning Soul: Positive Masculinity in Anime. I wanted to make that a regular thing. Unfortunately, it has not been, because you know, COVID.
Tell us a little bit about how that...
So that was super fun to come up with. I mean, it was mostly based on, like you said, Tyson, I dole out a lot of advice on Twitter. And a lot of it does come from me just needing to talk. I talk a lot. But if you can use it for good, I think that it's helpful. And I am the kind of man that really enjoys, you know, like very typical traditional masculine things. I love combat sports and I love, you know, like red meat and action films and things like that. But I also think that there's always a need for balance, and the way that you deal with people in life is not always represented well in anime. And there are a lot of poor examples of role models. People look at someone like Shield Hero, who is an absolute piece of shit and not the kind of man we should aspire to be. And instead of bringing down toxic masculinity, which is part of behaving well, is calling out toxic masculinity when it is doing things things wrong, but I feel that it is also equally important, if not more important, to bring up examples of positive masculinity. And so with this panel, first step was defining what is toxic masculinity, then defining what is positive masculinity, because it's not saying that masculinity itself is bad. The idea of it is neutral, and there are positive and negative aspects to it, and there are even some behaviors, like, for instance, something that we have probably all grown up with as men is that we are kind of expected to shoulder burdens ourselves, right? We are not supposed to go to our friends and cry on their shoulder when something bad happens, like family member is sick or passes away, or like even something less, like a show. You watch a show and something sad happens and you cry watching the show, right? That is an emotional reaction that it's cathartic, you know, you get that release, and that's part of what makes strongly emotional media very satisfying, is that you are able to safely get that kind of catharsis. I read One Piece, right? And One Piece, when there is that major death at the end of the Enies Lobby arc, oh my god, I cried like a baby, and I didn't actually lose anything. It's like a roller coaster, right? You get that safe fear or safe quote unquote negative feeling, and you come out of it feeling better, right? Weird analogy because I hate roller coasters, but at the same time, you get what I mean. I feel that with masculinity, we as men are expected to do a lot of things. We're expected to shoulder a lot of burdens on our own, not show or reveal any kind of vulnerability. We have to have a almost unhealthily hyper-competitive mindset. And as someone who is kind of solitary, because I'm an only child, you know, I'm used to doing things myself, raised in an environment, my dad is an ex-Marine, and you know, like, he's very tough and unemotional, and I was expected to be like that as well. And raised to be competitive, I like to win. I like to train and learn and win. It is a constant process of growth and evolution to look at all these parts of myself, in that I do have, you know, some toxic qualities that have to be turned around or adjusted to become more positive. I can be competitive and want to win, but it should not come at the cost of putting other people down. I can be a strong source of support for my friends and loved ones, but it should not come at the expense of my own health. That is what the positive masculinity panel was about. And it was about showing characters who really embody these ideals. I broke it down into different types of strong masculine presences that are, you know, kind of expected, like a provider or a teacher or a warrior even, and positive examples of these. So like the provider would be Maes Hughes from Full Metal Alchemist. He cares about being a father and being a husband. He loves these things. These are good qualities, and he is willing to give of himself without a need for getting anything back. And that's what makes it so beautiful, right? For the warrior, which you could think of as like a very kind of dangerous mindset, because it is focused on conquest and becoming stronger just for the sake of being stronger. But you look at someone like Guy from Naruto, and he is an endlessly positive source of that kind of mentality, because him improving, he wants to improve for his own sake, but he also wants to see other people improve so they can feel as good as he does. And it's not that you are weak if you can't keep up with him. It just means you're not strong enough yet right now, you know? So we'll keep working on that and make everything better. And I just really, I love and appreciate that. It eventually comes around to talking about there's like 5 or 6 different archetypes of positive masculine role models. And it comes to Kenshiro, who is the most stoic and the most unemotional. And yet Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star is pretty perfect in all accounts, because he never tries to hurt or fight anyone who hasn't done anything awful. Like, there's no need to fight when you don't have to, but if you've got to protect somebody, give it your all. Show everybody respect, show everybody love. Kenshiro is a great character, and he's kind of a stealth great character. And that's kind of where that panel ended up. I had a great time doing that panel, and I would love to do it again. I think that getting the chance to do that again, because there were people who, after, it was Crunchyroll Expo that I did that. There were people who came up to me on the street afterwards and really had a good time. I think the other thing too that really did it for me was people at the panel itself were able to open up and share a lot of their experience experiences about, because it's not, talking about positive masculinity does not exclude the need or the space for women to talk about their experiences with toxic femininity, or, you know, like the expectation that women are supposed to stay at home and be mothers and wives and things like that. And it opened up a lot of discussion from a lot of people. And I really loved seeing that and making that kind of space available for people to talk about their problems or talk about things in their past that have kind of shaped them into what they are now. And that panel was just a great experience.
Indeed it was. I can probably say that I'm one of the people that came to you after the panel and I was like, dude, you need to do this again. It was such a
I would love to. Like, as soon as things are back to normal-ish and we have conventions again, I will try and put this out for every convention that I can go to.
At least myself, I can only manage to attend Crunchyroll Expo, but if you are able to pitch that to the committee panel in 2021, if things are better by then I would definitely love to see it. Okay, so with that said, we need to go to another ad. We'll be back after these messages.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the wonderful people at JList. JList brings you the latest anime and otaku goods from Japan directly, whether that's anime, manga, cosplay, import game, visual novels. JList has got you covered. Learn more at gallifepodcast.com/JList and remember to use our link and the code GALP for 5% off on all purchases on JList, that's including pre-orders. Remember, gallifepodcast.com/JList. Thank you very much, JList, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Hello, this is just a reminder for you guys to check out our Discord page. If you go to getlifepodcast.com/Discord, join our Discord page, join in on all the discussions that we're going to be having, whether it's in our gaming channel, our anime channel, go check us out there. Hopefully in the future, we'll be doing our giveaways, all podcast giveaways will be done via Discord as well. So make sure you join in on the fun. In addition to that, make sure you follow us on Twitter at getlifepodcast. If you like what you see here, follow us on Twitter. We'll be posting new episodes, videos, announcements, things like that on Twitter as well. So be sure to check out our Twitter page if you want to be notified of all those kind of stuff. Anyway, back onto the episode. Okay, we are back. Thanks, Tyson, for the little ad intro thingy. I really like that. But now we're on the final segment, which is Nate's lightning round. I'm looking forward to this the most.
I'm nervous. I'm not sure what Nate's going to ask, but okay.
So just a little bit of background. Lightning Round is something I came up with when I did interviews for Crunchyroll News. I have had the opportunity to interview a lot of really cool people like Chris Sabat, voice actor, twice. Game developer Suda51 twice, and Robert Rodriguez once, my favorite director, which was unbelievable. That's like bucket list shit right there. That was awesome. But every single interview I do, it's called a lightning round, which is a bunch of quick questions. Just answer off the top of your head. Don't think about it too hard, and let's just have some fun with this. Let's start with a pretty basic one. What's a movie or TV show you've recently watched that you think more people should check out?
Bish, you want to start first? I need some time to think my answer.
Go first, Bish.
Oh shit, I don't even know what was the last film I watched.
Doesn't have to be anything profound. What's the last thing you watched that you were like, shit, more people need to watch this?
I would say Your Name. That's not like the last thing that I saw anyway. But that was like 2 years ago. I saw it on a plane.
Okay.
It's not a particularly hot opinion, but more people should watch The First Core or ReZero Season 2. That's the last thing I watched and I'm like, oh my god, this is so good.
So for mine, I will go with Warrior. It's a show, it's an action show right now. It is based off the writings of Bruce Lee and it takes place during the San Francisco Gold Rush. So there is a Chinese immigrant who experiences racism and difficulty within the system of becoming an American immigrant. And he also beats the fuck out of a lot of people and it's glorious. So yeah, watch Warrior.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know where it is on international streaming services. It might either be on Netflix or Amazon Prime, double check. Here in the US, it's on Cinemax, which has become kind of an action channel now, which is great. All right, so I know we're not going to bars right now because we are smart and we are not, you know, we are socially distancing, but what is your regular order at a bar?
Guinness, pint of Guinness.
Okay.
Pint of Guinness.
Good one. Tyson.
I order wings. To the disappointment of many, I don't drink.
That's totally fine. For me, it's nice and simple. A gin and tonic mixed heavy. Here's one. What's a video game you love that you just can't seem to get anyone else into?
Wow. Probably Perfect Dark, but more so on the fact that its mechanics have aged. But it was a very important video game for me. I just can't seem that even with a remaster on Xbox 360, I can get people to it.
I believe you. I bought Perfect Dark on 360 and have replayed it, and it's fantastic. But it is also, it's kind of older, so like I get that people would have a little difficulty with it. Okay, let's try something a little more anime focused. What is something that was very popular when you were young, but you just couldn't get into it?
Naruto.
Naruto? Okay. Tyson?
I need a couple more minutes. Why don't you go first, and hopefully I'll have an answer.
So I think for me, it's probably Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, I know I was in high school when Yu-Gi-Oh! Came out, but I was still very much into anime at that time, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Was just something that never, like, Pokemon, I played the games, I like it, I have an attachment to it, but I don't have, like, as strong an attachment to Pokemon as many other people. But Yu-Gi-Oh! I never read until last week. I read the first, my housemate Daniel has the 3-in-1 volume, and I read that, and the manga is so weird and cool. It's like Kaiji for kids, so I was very surprised. But before that, I had never really given it much thought.
Guess I'm gonna go with the controversial opinion and say One Piece. Like, just cannot get into One Piece. I'm sorry.
I understand that.
I know you love it, Nathan. I'm sorry, but just cannot get into it.
I get it. Like, it is a big investment, and it's not something that everybody, like, I think everybody should read One Piece, but read it on your own terms, because you gotta enjoy it. Like, you can't, if it feels like homework, it's not fun, you know? All right, this one is just for me. This is a me question right here. What's the last fight you saw that made you go, holy shit? The movie, anime, whatever.
The United States of Smash. That was for me. Yes. That was
good one, good one.
I'll continue the My Academia reference, and a fight that made me go, holy shit, was when there was this episode in which Bakugo was just so frustrated at the improvement of Izuku, and he was like, I want to know why I'm not special. It can come at me. I'll beat the living hell out of you. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but I was like, holy shit, this guy is going at Izuku like he wants to kill him. So that's my answer.
That's a good one. Those are very good. My Hero Academia is a very, like, emotionally strong series. Are you, quick question before I get on this, are you guys reading anything in Jump Weekly right now?
I am not. No,
I don't read Shonen Jump. I read like Shoujo Beat. That's what I read. So I like a lot of shoujo stuff. So
shoujo manga is wonderful. So we'll switch that up. Bish, name three shoujo manga that you really love that people should check out.
I'm trying to, off the top of my head, Kiss Him Not Me. That's one.
Ah, so good.
Honey So Sweet is another one.
I haven't read that one. I think my girlfriend has it. I should read it.
You should. It's a really good one. And So Cute It Hurts. That's another.
I have not read that one. I'll look for it.
It's nice. You should go and see it. It's quite a nice story. It's about twins that basically they swap places. So one goes to an all-girl school, one goes to an all-boy school, and they swap places and find love. It's quite.
That sounds awesome. I'm down to check that out.
So how about this, Nate? I can't tell you what I'm reading in Jump right now, as I pretty much fell off the train. Okay, so I guess I should give some background here. So Viz made the decision to just stop the weekly series of multiple volumes and just release chapters as they go. That's pretty much around the time in which I started to I fell off the boat. So at least what I have been reading late, and I give a read whenever I get the opportunity. I'm getting through Princess Jellyfish. I do have the big box.
I love Princess Jellyfish. Good pick.
I'm reading through Given. So after watching the anime last year, it got me enticed to pick up the manga. So I've been reading that. I still haven't gotten into stuff that hasn't been touched in the anime, but I'll continue to look forward for more volumes. And then the last one, which I recently finished reading, since it was only 8 chapters, Bloom Into You.
Okay,
it was so good. And I'm actually looking forward to checking out the anime. I just haven't gotten around to it. All right. So, okay,
those are very good picks. All right. Let me see what else I've got. Okay. Sorry. We kind of burned through a lot of my questions are gaming related. Now, real quick, how are you guys? I mean, I know Tyson, you play a lot of Call of Duty. We still haven't gotten around to playing some Modern Warfare.
But the time difference does fuck us over.
Yeah, that's very true. I've actually kind of moved into a roguelite phase right now. And all I'm doing is playing either Hades or Slay the Spire, and they are...
Oh my god, I just bought Hades, so good!
Ah! Hades is outstanding. Bish, do you play games?
Yeah, in fact, funny thing is, this podcast is a spin-off of our gaming podcast, so yeah, we do play
games. Oh, fantastic! Are you playing Hades right now?
No, unfortunately not.
Okay, you should. It's wonderful. Tyson, what build are you using?
I'm using, for now, the sword one, since I haven't gotten that far yet. I've only managed to clear 11 spaces as of yet, but man, I've seen everything. I'm like, it's so good. I can't wait to play more. That's pretty much where I am with Hades right now.
Kind of game where I will say one more run, just one more run. That's all. And then it's actually 10 more runs and it's 2 a.m. and I got to go to bed.
So,
I love games like that, but I have taken occasional breaks from Hades so I can play Slay the Spire, which is a card-based roguelite, and it's very, very addicting. I love stuff like that. So that is what I have been doing. You know what, guys? I will let you grill me with a couple questions. Anything you want, I will do my best to answer as truthfully as I am able.
Okay. Keeping it with the theme of anime, Nate, favorite anime stuff?
Favorite anime studio is probably Madhouse. Like, consistently, Madhouse gives me what I want.
Tyson, can we answer these as well? Because that's an interesting question. Yeah, yeah, I think JC Staff, but that's just me.
In my case, right now, definitely Kiwani. Like, okay. In my eyes, they can do no wrong.
They are a pretty wonderful studio that does amazing work.
Yeah, I agree, 100%. And they brought us Nagisa, so...
Ah!
You know.
I have one. Okay, you have to walk out to some kind of, like, either... wrestling, boxing, MMA, whatever. You have to have a walkout song as you walk out to the ring. What is your walkout song?
The thing is that a majority of the music that is used for walkout is either hip hop or rock. And I'll be honest, I'm mostly into electronic music myself. So
you can do that.
Okay then. Probably something from Mo Shop. So they are this artist based out of Japan that are very inspired by French house. I believe the person is French themselves. Oh my god! Ever since I was introduced to them, it was like I've been addicted.
Tyson, have you heard the song "You Look Good" or "You Look So Good" or something like that?
"You Look So Good" is probably my top 25 most played.
It's a great song. I like that.
Nice. I know. That wouldn't be my walkout song, just in case. I would say, let's do the first song that I was introduced by them. It's called Baby Pink.
Okay. You know what, like Tyson? That. I thought it was going to be the intro for Hentai Prince and the Stony Cat.
I forgot that existed.
That was the first anime that we reviewed on Kunai, actually. So.
Yeah, it was the first anime.
I liked it. Mine, I would say, I don't know. I'm feeling either the intro for the original Fruits Basket or School Rumble.
That's kind of that. If someone walked out to the School Rumble opening, I would be kind of intimidated. Or the original Fruits Basket, because that is some like calm killer energy right there.
Mm-hmm. Don't fuck with me.
Rocky Balboa walking out to high hopes.
So what's your walkout song, Nate?
Oh, I actually have a walkout song. It's Dreams by Van Halen. So that is my actual, like, when I was competing, that was my walkout song.
Oh, cool. Are you still competing or?
No. I was like 19 and 20 when I did full contact karate. That was it.
I'm sure that I can think about it harder. I can come up with something, but right now I'm spent. Oh. I don't have anything. And how about we do one more? And we're pretty much running out of ideas here. Let's do it about any topic. How about it?
Like what? I don't know.
Nate said that he has a lot of gaming ones. So let's do a gaming one to wrap this up. How about it?
People play games so differently, right? Like I am very like mechanically focused. I like games that I can replay. What is something that you replay constantly every year, or like you just focus on it, like kind of hyper fixate on it? What is a game that is attached to the hip to you?
I have a few. One of them is Dynasty Warriors, but that's just because I grew up with the series.
As for me, I typically don't replay games, mostly because I have such a huge backlog that I'm pretty confident that I've committed the great game in saying of playing my games on easy, just because I just want to experience the thing. So as to what game do I replay, not because it's not really because I want to get good, like that part of that ship has sailed. It's definitely Call of Duty, only because I get to play with my mates.
What about Persona? Because you must have played it a couple of times just to do all the social links, right?
You'll be surprised, I haven't. I'm still looking at the trophy list to see if I go back into Royale. I believe it's much easier this time around to fill out the compendium. It requires a little work from what I take it, yes. But as in replay it, and if I replay a game, it's because I want to do something. Generally, games, I just play them once. And if I'm specifically going achievement hunting or trophy hunting, then I generally don't pick those up.
Nate, I have a question for you. Like,
yeah.
Do you read comics?
Yes.
Okay, so if you can have like one superpower for a year, what would it be?
For a year. Okay. Just for 1 year. You know what? I'm going to go more low key with this. I will go with Taskmaster's photographic reflexes.
Okay.
And I would use that to get back in shape, get back in fighting shape. Not necessarily to like do anything with it, but like that would be really good for like I can watch a weightlifting video and have perfect form. And always have perfect form. That way I will never get injured again. I can watch a martial arts form. Like, I have always wanted to study Chinese martial arts. I've only taken a little bit of that because I just ended up studying more Japanese martial arts and boxing. So I would love to learn how to do forms or like, you know, kata kind of things, but I never really, I did karate, I did Shorin Ryu karate, and I know kata from that, but I would love to learn other forms that look flashier and know how to do those like crazy flying kicks, you know, stuff like that. That's what I would use it for. So that way I could selfishly enrich my own martial knowledge.
I'm thinking about, I know it's not really necessarily a superpower, but Midas touch, like touching shit and making it turn into gold.
Oh, that's good and dangerous.
I know, but it'll only be for a year. So if I don't touch anything else, like if I accidentally like hug my mom and she turns into gold, then I'm fucked. But
just do the kung fu salute with your fist in your hand. Be like, sorry, ma, COVID.
Yeah.
You know, no hug this time. But would you like a gold car? Like, I can take care of that for you.
But I could, but then what would you do with a gold car?
Exactly, yeah.
Because it wouldn't move, right? It would be dense.
Oh, the whole thing turns. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, I mean, you can do anything with that. Like, touch a piece of wood, turns into gold. Mm-hmm. Pick your nose, turn your boogers into gold.
But would you? Oh, yeah, that's true. I was wondering, like, if you touch yourself on accident, like touch your face, would you? You wouldn't turn yourself into gold, right?
No, you would.
I'm just gonna use my get out of jail card on this one because I don't read comics, so I don't have any idea.
You don't necessarily need to read comics because that wasn't the Midas touch wasn't from a comic book.
I mean,
a kind of general power, like super strength or you know flight or something like that. Although, okay, I have a cheat answer. Instant transmission. Goku's instant transmission. That would be the easiest, nicest form. I don't like flying, all right? I don't like flying in planes, but I want to visit places.
That's actually a good answer. I think I'm going to co-op just because I don't have an answer of my own.
It has its benefits, but like Bish said, it has its drawbacks. So you got to be thoughtful about it.
The one thing that's in my head right now is that that quote from Uncle Ben in Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. And that being said, guys, that's been this episode of the podcast. Thank you, Nate, for coming on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, guys.
You know what? I really like this. This is like my first conversation with Nate other than email. So pretty cool. I like that. Tyson, thank you for coming on. We'll be seeing more of Tyson, hopefully, So if you guys like Tyson,
thanks for having me.
Awesome. If you don't like Tyson, then email me and we'll never get Tyson on again. It's up to you guys. We might do a poll on our Discord whether or not you guys want us to bar Tyson. We can do that. It's up to you guys. But that being said, thank you guys for coming on. And also big thanks to our sponsors, Crunchyroll, Japan Crate, and JList. We are doing a special giveaway with JList, just so you guys know. Details will be in our Discord. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say any more than that. Bye.